since he started from the crib plus kids. Don't need to hear all of that on a rap. The strength of my vibe placed Chubbs on the map, cause authority, seniority goes forth me. My staff gives autograph plus gives enough laughs. Read my might, heed my sight. I definitely lead you right.
As long as there have been human beings, the human beings have gathered in the summers at the different times of the year to celebrate being human beings. And so to me, this is kind of a form of that, what's happening in this technological digital reality that we're in. So it's good to see that everyone's bringing their energy here in a way that's really about celebrating and feeling good. So this is the part of the kind of reality that our reality needs, the kind of healing thing. Well, as long as I'm up here, you don't go on the subject. Human beings, right? Because most of you are not my generation. I came out of the generation that did whatever we did in our own way to try to make things better for your generation. There were accomplishments, and then there were things that weren't really quite accomplished, and they've been left kind of fuzzy and hazy and things, I think, still. But one is that I think is important. We remember that we're human beings, that we recognize ourselves as human beings, because that's the reality of who we are. Somehow they know how to make that voice reach from the ancient to the futuristic, right? While it passes through the present.
Riding in my Indian car. Coming up is Mosaic, and you're listening to the CKT Radio at 90.3 FM. I'm Sarah Hassanin. The maximum temperature today is near 28 degrees. A partly windy and humid day is expected. Here's the news from Alice Wu.
My name is Alice Wu, and here are some of the recent headlines. On Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the landmark case Roe v. Wade. This means the American federal government no longer recognizes a constitutional right to abortion. In response, hundreds of Quebecers wore black and protested in front of the Montreal courthouse on Sunday afternoon. And the Cree Nation of Chisasabi announced that it would launch the first investigation into residential school graves in Quebec. Two residential schools operated on the nation's territory from 1933 to 1981. And this summer, six emergency rooms across Quebec will be reducing their operating hours and will have to turn away ambulances. The affected regions include Lachine in Montreal. The partial closures are due to staff shortages, with 59,000 missing or absent healthcare workers across Quebec. And Montreal's International Jazz Festival is coming. It takes place in the Quartier des Spectacles and features 500 performances, both indoors and outdoors. Two-thirds of these performances are free. The festival runs for 10 days, from this Thursday, June 30th to July 9th. For more information, visit montrealjazzfest.com. And Saturday marked the return of Montreal's fireworks competition, l'International du Feu Loto Québec. World-class pyrotechnic teams will compete Wednesday and Saturday evenings over 6 weeks. They launch their fireworks from La Ronde, the Six Flags amusement park by the St. Lawrence River. For more information, visit sixflags.com/laronde-en.
Je m'appelle Alice Wu et voici quelques des gros titres récents. Le vendredi, la Cour suprême des États-Unis a révoqué l'arrêt phare Roe v. Wade. Ainsi, il n'existe plus une droit constitutionnel fédéral à l'avortement aux États-Unis. En réponse, des centaines de Québécois habillés en noir ont manifesté contre cette décision devant le tribunal de Montréal le dimanche après-midi. Et la Nation Cree de Chisasibi a annoncé qu'elle ouvrirait la première enquête sur les tombes situées sur les anciens sites des pensionnats scolaires au Québec. Deux pensionnats ont opéré sur le territoire de cette nation entre 1933 et 1981. Et cet été, 6 salles d'urgence au Québec réduiront leurs heures d'ouverture et seront obligées de refuser des ambulances. Les régions affectées incluent la Chine à Montréal. Ces fermetures partielles sont en raison d'une pénurie de personnel. Il y a 59 000 agents de santé absents au Québec. Et maintenant, voici des nouvelles directement pertinentes à votre vie. 7 stations de métro offriront l'entrée gratuite chaque fin de semaine jusqu'en septembre. Ceci reflète les efforts de la ville d'encourager l'utilisation du transport public. Les stations participantes sont Berry-UQAM, Champ-de-Mars, McGill, Peel, Place d'Armes, Place des Arts et Saint-Laurent. Et le Festival international de jazz de Montréal va commencer cette semaine. Il aura lieu dans le quartier des spectacles et inclura 500 représentations musicales à l'intérieur et à l'extérieur. 2/3 de ces représentations sont gratuites. Le festival va durer 10 jours, de ce jeudi 30 juin jusqu'au 9 juillet. Pour en savoir plus, visitez montrealjazzfest.com. Et samedi était le premier jour de la compétition de feux d'artifice de Montréal, l'International des Feux Loto-Québec. Pendant 6 semaines, des équipes pyrotechniques internationales présenteront des spectacles les mercredis et dimanches soirs. Les feux d'artifice seront lancés du parc d'attractions La Ronde, situé près du fleuve Saint-Laurent. Pour plus d'informations, visitez laronde.com.
And that was the news by Alice Wu. On May 11th of this year, at the Jenin camp in Palestine, Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh was killed by bullets fired by Israeli forces. Abu Akleh was killed while she was covering an army raid on Jenin in the northern occupied West Bank. Her killing led to outrage from Palestinians and around the world, with thousands attending her funeral in occupied East Jerusalem. Rim Araji has more.
شيرين أبو عقل الجزيرة من بلدة سيلة الحارثية غربي جنين.
Today marks just over a month and a half since the death of renowned Palestinian-American Al Jazeera journalist Shirin Abu Akleh. While covering Israeli army raids in Jenin, a northern city of the occupied West Bank, Abu Akleh was fatally shot by Israeli forces. At the time when shots were fired, she was in her press vest, standing with a group of fellow journalists, one of whom was also shot and wounded. The other journalists on the scene stated that there were no active confrontations between Palestinian groups and the Israeli Defense Forces to provoke the shots. Perhaps even more bewildering than the incident of Abu Akleh's death is the actions of the Israeli police at her funeral march, which took place just days after her murder. Images show the martyred journalist's coffin nearly falling to the ground as police tear Palestinian flags from the hands of grievers. This occurred outside of St. Louis French Hospital in the occupied East Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. Last Thursday, the Israeli police announced that they had concluded an investigation into police conduct during this funeral procession. Rather than releasing the findings, the Israeli police commissioner, Kobi Shabbatai, simply stated that it was a complex event, mentioning the presence of supposed violent rioters at the march. Further, the police state that there was no indication that she was intentionally targeted, failing to answer the question of why shots were fired at a nonviolent group of journalists wearing press vests. Shirin Abu Akleh was considered the voice of Palestinians throughout her career and was a highly regarded journalist. From Palestinians detained in Israeli prisons to Palestinians in the diaspora, she was a resolute advocate, intent on amplifying the voices of her people. Many Palestinians and other Arab listeners grew up with her, constantly learning from her groundbreaking fieldwork and admiring her fearless spirit. Now, even a month after her murder, we still feel the heartbreak and distress of losing one of Al Jazeera and the world's greatest assets to the fight for human rights. Rim Araji, CKUT, Montreal.
And now I'll share a part of an interview Mosaic had with Mr. Mohammed Sharif Kamel, an Egyptian-Canadian activist, member of the Egyptian Coalition for Democracy, a prolific writer and an advocate for the Palestinian cause. You're listening to Mosaic for the CKT Radio at 90.3 FM. The international community and how they're reacting to what's happening to this crisis. Up till now, we have 200 victims. What's your take on the international reaction to this?
The international community, and we have to recognize that it is a disaster has been built by the silence of the international community. And even if we didn't go before 1967, and we stopped at 1967, as many countries recognized that this is, should be the border of Israel, which is, I have a doubt of many things there, but it's not my business. It is the international community recognized 1967 as the border of Israel. And the Palestinian has the right to their own homeland country to be established in West Bank and Gaza. Since 1967 until today, the international community did nothing at all. The United Nations has this resolution. Even there is more resolution than this. There is resolutions about the right of Palestinians to return to their land, which is considered Israel on the border, within the border of 1967. And no one able to really implement this resolution. no one able to implement the resolutions about 1967 because Israel resisted. And the international community not only silent to this, but most of the country are dealing with Israel as a legitimate, even they consider it occupation land, they still deal with Israel as this. And they supply weapons to Israel, they arm them, they deal with them normally. Several countries moved their embassy to Jerusalem, which is shouldn't be under Israeli control, at least the east part of it. Several countries, and unfortunately Canada among them, buy product from the settlement and written on it product of Israel, which is this is an, a great violation for international law. And no one country said anything about the human rights violation that take place every day on the occupied land in West Bank and Gaza, the siege on Gaza on more than 17, 18 years now. No one cared about those almost 2 million people living in Gaza, about them, how they live, if they suffer or not. It's not, they don't, nobody cared. And most of them are from the border before 1967, where they were in Palestine and evacuated from their land for, to the refugees camp. And why that's why the density of Gaza is very high, 2 million in this small piece of land. And the international community don't care, didn't do anything. And every time Palestinians try to go to the United Nations, they get maybe soft resolution sometime or a veto from US the other time, because US consider Israel their own allies, which is, I don't know why, because they don't do anything by just harming US image around the world. And, but we might have to say, because there's a right-wing Jewish who finance the election of US, and it's knowing that Biden, unfortunately, one of the people who must get most of the finance from the Jewish Zionist group in US. So the international community did nothing until now. So that's why Palestinian has no choice but try to, you know, they scream by what they're doing. Because if anybody said that the rocket from Gaza is unacceptable, I would consider it unacceptable for sure to fire arm a rocket to any place. But what those people can do, and when they say that the rocket is not acceptable, for sure, we can might agree that any fight not acceptable. But what about the blank bombarding of Gaza and killing people, destroying houses, killing children, killing women, and destroying the infrastructure of this small area, which has been built with a penny amount of finance, while Israelis have the finance from all over the world. Just yesterday, close to a $1 billion arm deal decided by the US government to Israel, and nothing go to Palestinian. And all this, and even above all this, Israel attack and destroy the building in Gaza who's hosting the international press, the CBC, the BBC, the Al Jazeera, the Associated Press, the France Press, all those people hosted in a building. Israel destroy this building, and the only thing we hear from international community, it is not acceptable. The word is not acceptable is not a word even to be said. I think I would expect that the international community who is speaking about human rights and freedom of expression and freedom of press, they have to say at least it is condemned to do that. Several times, Palestinians try to bring Israeli action to the International Court of Justice, been blocked by United States and other countries, been even denied the right to investigate anything and go in Israel because they consider it internal affair. It's expired land, guys, not an internal affair. And we know that the war crime committed by Israel in Lebanon before, in Kana massacre, has been brought to the International Court of Justice and been shelved because nobody except to deal with them. So several investigations has been done on the international level. Human rights organization, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, several human rights organizations have a detailed report about the human rights violation by Israeli and the occupied land and within Israel border itself, a discrimination. Jimmy Carter wrote his book, which is about peace, not apartheid, because what's taking place in this area now is a clear apartheid. And we see when Palestinian Arab try to support their relatives on Sheikh Jarrah, they just been denied and been attacked and killed by Israeli settler and by Jewish extreme right-wing group in all the area, in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, in Yaffa. They just attack, and in Lod, they attack Arab, and the police, Israeli police, attack the Arab, not don't attack any Jewish, and they cannot attack Jewish because for them it's forbidden. So international community did nothing. International community now just wasting time in United Nations, waiting Israel to finish its mission by destroying Gaza, hoping that Israel will be able to destroy all the infrastructure of the fighter who fighting against Israel from Gaza. That is the only thing they're doing. But because look what's happened, just unacceptable words about unacceptable and stuff like this going from left and right. And even United Nations Security Council is meeting now for 3 days, not able to come up with any solution, with any word, just word about ceasefire, and that's it. Calm down and ceasefire, and then we will look at the Palestinian rights, how we can implement it. They're looking at this since 1967 and it's not been implemented. 1967 is more than generation, two generations now, and people are leaving and the land occupied. So when we speak about it, the only country on the earth who occupy land, violate human rights, mm-hmm. practice apartheid, and nobody stopped them and nobody forced them to stop. I think the system, if we remember how the system in South Africa collapsed, it's collapsed only when the international community put a pressure on them. It started by civil society, and I think now we have to start to call to boycott Israel, to stop dealing with Israel, and that is has to start from the civil society, not from the government, because the government are really entrenching this with Israel on the suffering of Palestinians. They, all the international governments, are part of it. We cannot deny this, that a UN resolution and Security Council resolutions since 1967, no one has the gut to tell Israel, you have to apply it or we will put a siege on you. You remember what happened in Iraq when I put a siege in Iraq because of disagreement with the Americans on this. And they put a siege in Iraq, left and right and center, and even they went there without UN acceptance, and US decided just to go to war against Iraq. And all this happened. What's happening with Israel? We are not asking to fight Israel. We're asking to force them to implement United Nations resolutions since, by the way, 1947 resolution. That Israel being created with is based on two-state solution on a border being determined by the British mandate at that time. And this is the only right for Israel to exist. So if they would like to exist, I think they should be forced to go back to 1947 resolution and agree to have the Palestinian state. I use the word agree because nobody can force them. So the international community doing nothing. Your question about international community, they're doing nothing. They really have the gut to go condemn the rocket. By the way, the rocket's coming from Gaza to Israel. And I said, it's not acceptable to have any fight and people lose life in any side of the world. That's no doubt about this. But the rocket coming from there, I'm sorry to say that close to toys to what Israel army is. Israel is one of the best, if not the best, and biggest army on the earth. And we are not just tolerating this and condemning the rocket coming from Gaza and not condemning the Israeli attack on Palestinian. Just consider that it has to stop. International community is weak. And unless the civil society rise up and force their own government to act, I don't think anything will happen. And even if the things calm down in a few days or a few weeks, or we don't know when, it will come back again. People will never live at peace unless they have their rights. And the rights is not a point of view of Israeli or Palestinian. The rights is being created by history, is being approved and agreed on by United Nations itself.
Mr. Kemal, there's been an invitation by Joe Biden himself calling on Egypt to try to contribute to the situation and work towards a ceasefire. Now, you as an Egyptian Montrealer, an Egyptian activist for democracy in Egypt, what chances are there out for the Egyptian government to play a significant role towards this crisis now?
Egyptian government have a good, stable relation, not 100% agreed on everything with the government of Gaza, but they have a stable relation with them. And they have a line of contact with them. But when we spoke about the siege on Gaza that's taking place for 17, 18 years now, we have to mention that the Egyptian government is part of the siege on Gaza, because Gaza border with Israel is the shortest border of Gaza. Most of Gaza border is within Egypt. But actually almost 50-50, yeah, just to say, so because there's the cross between both are very clear borders. And the Egyptian government actually never been a friend of the people of Gaza. They deny them medication as Israel do exactly. They deny them fuel as Israel do exactly. They deny them food as Israel do exactly. And even during COVID problem we live in, they deny them medication, they deny them vaccine, they deny them even test kits for COVID. So to imagine that they've been denied everything. So Egypt and Israel are compliant in what actually the siege is. Egypt for sure have a hand over there. And we know that the Egyptian regime has been brought to power by Israel allies. And Benjamin Netanyahu several times said that I would never have good friends as what I have from the Egyptian president right now. So if Egypt can do something, yes, Egypt might be able to put some pressures on Palestinians. But to really reach a ceasefire, you need somebody to put pressure on the Israeli. So what the Israeli tried to do is they tried to use Egypt and other countries who have some sense of relation with the people of Gaza and the Palestinian Authority for sure. And they tried to hold them, to pressure them to stop. So Israel ended winning. And there is no ceasefire like this will be established a winning side. It will end with lose-lose, actually. We try to reach a win-win when people live in peace and harmony. So if you would like to tell Palestinian of Gaza, an Egyptian would like to do something, they have to tell them clearly that stop fire and all siege are going to be removed. At this time, I think that will consider a win-win condition. So Benjamin Netanyahu can say that I win the war and I stop the rocket and enjoy his victories. And people of Palestine, Gazan people can say, we win the war and the siege has been lifted. So this is what we call it win-win. But what they try to do is they just try to pressure Palestinian of Gaza as before, will destroy you, will kill you, please stop the war for the sake of children, for the sake of the women, and that's what they use. Please stop the war and we'll give you some medication and we're going to have another conference to discuss peace treaty. So I if you would like to ask me the question, is Israel going to succeed or not? I have no idea, because the war is a war. And if Palestinians reach a point that they cannot resist anymore, they will stop fighting with Israeli, because they are in even whatever rocket, the 1,000 rocket they threw, they are in the weak side of the fight. So yes, they can stop it, but under one condition, nobody knows. But if they do, this will be another round of maybe a couple of years and come back again.
Mr. Kamel, have you been personally in touch with any of the Palestinians who are struggling right now as we speak?
I'm not in touch with any Palestinian over there on the occupied land or in Gaza. I'm in touch with Palestinians here in Montreal who have their own families over there and all their own relatives over there between Gaza and Rafah and the West Bank and the Sheikh Jarrah. We are in touch with the people, of Palestinians who live within the Israel and they carry Israel IDs and being faced with the discrimination by the police and by the Israeli government and the Jewish right-wing extremists over there. I'm in touch with those people who are locally here, but not the people over there.
And what vibes are you getting from the Palestinian families living here in Montreal, whose families are back there, like you said?
They are very devastating. They don't know what to do. They are in shock. They just would like to be sure that they hear about their family, that they are safe, but they are not safe. They know that any second, any one of them could be died. Even a full family could be died, and we know that's not the first war. Israel bombed Gaza and families died in total, and 7 people in one family, 8 people in one family, and the last war the same thing, and this war the same thing. So they don't know if their family will survive or not. And it's not only close family, those people are living in a life that they know each other, neighbors, friends went to school together, went to hostels to be treated together. They married to each other, they have a relative. So it's not only scared and devastated about their own small families, but about their big family as well. And they can't find any hope. They don't see a hope, but maybe, and that's what happened when Nazis attack Jewish, and when Hitler occupied Paris and France, the whole, and several for sure other countries in Europe, everybody stand by French. Right to resist, to kick the Nazi and Hitler out of France. And I think that is the only hope that people stand with Palestinian right to resist and kick the occupation out of their home. And that's how those people feel. They feel they can do nothing. They just have to follow the news and just have to see what's going to happen tomorrow. Can they send some food, some money to their relative to eat? Is the relative eating? Are they hungry? Are they have their medication? Even Israel bombarding the hospitals, even. So there is no secret place for Israel. They bombard mosques, churches, hospitals, the press buildings. So what do you think people will live like this? That's how the relatives here and friends here in Montreal live in a minute by minute, waiting the sad news and they knowing that it will come.
That was a part of Mosaic's interview with Mr. Mohammed Sharif Kamel, an Egyptian-Canadian activist, and his comment on the humanitarian crisis in the occupied Palestine and Israelis' violations of human rights conventions on the heels of their attack on Gaza last summer. You're listening to the CKT Radio at 90.3 FM. More than 7 million people in Bangladesh are in desperate need of shelter and emergency relief after what one aid agency has described as the worst flooding to hit South Asia in living memory. Pranjal Malik from CKT News spoke with Mr. Arfan Khurshid, the director of the HRC, one of the few organizations that rushed to help the victims of the flood.
And what do you think about the intensity of the situation and the attention it receives?
So Bangladesh usually they do get, but they generally happen in the month of June or July.
Yeah.
But the intensity usually in July or maybe later time, but this time it came in the month of May, the first time, and Sylhet, which is in northeast. Bangladesh, it got hit very badly, and at that time around maybe 2 million people were affected. But 17 days after that, around 17 or 18 days after that, the same area plus some other districts in that area, Sylhet, especially there's a district called Sunamganj, It got really devastated by even more intense floods, you know. And because of this, as you have also mentioned, that more than 4 million people are affected, and half of them are children, you know. So people are reeling. The water has come into their homes. The schools in that area, which usually becomes the place for shelter, they are also underwater. So people are just in a very difficult situation, living in water, which can cause waterborne diseases and things like that. So that's basically the situation. Whatever as a human being we can possibly do, we are trying to reach out to them, trying to provide them clean water in bottles, and then also cooked meals, because the water is still there, so they can't really cook the food. So we are trying to provide them cooked meals and those kind of things now, and then maybe once the water recedes, then we will provide them with some household items and dry wash and other things like that.
Well, thank you so much. That seems like a really awful situation to be in. And is there something we can do to provide immediate aids? What do you think about the long-term solutions to this problem at the same time? Because you said the floods usually are in month of June and July, and now they're coming way sooner and way worse.
Yeah, so right now, as I said, that our organization, at the organizational level, we are trying to reach to at least, you know, we cannot reach to all the people, but if all the organizations and all the entities together, they work in smaller bunches, they can help a large number of people with the help of the government. So at least we have chalked out a plan for 7,200 families, which would mean around 40,000 people. What we are trying to do is, for the next few days, we are providing them every day hot meals, cooked meals, and then once the water recedes, we will provide them some dry ration, which will last for 1 week. Now, the other thing which is needed on the long run will be that their homes have got the water, so they will need a lot of repairs and recuperation for that. There are a lot of water facilities, like hand pumps and things like that. Tube wells, they've got destroyed, so maybe we'll have to rehabilitate some of these water projects and also help people to get back on their feet. And a couple of things maybe needed down the road are healthcare and nutrition programs, as well as livelihood programs, where we can help them to regain their livelihood. So so this is how we are planning. People who are interested to know more about it can visit our website, hhrd.org/Bangladesh.
Thank you so much. You are doing great work for people who are really in need of it. And thank you so much for giving your time.
Today marks the 155th anniversary of Confederation. All those who celebrate Canada as their home and native land celebrate Canada Day on July 1st. The day commemorates the anniversary of the Constitution Act, which consolidated three territories into the single nation of Canada back in 1867. Until 1982, Canada celebrated Dominion Day as their national holiday. The day was then renamed Canada Day. Throughout the mid-1800s, the possibility of unification between the British North American colonies was discussed. On July 1, 1867, the British Parliament brought the British North America Act into effect, leading to the creation of independent Canada. The territories within the Dominion consisted of Upper and Lower Canada, Nova Scotia, and New Brunswick. Through this act, Canada was divided into Quebec and Ontario, following provisions for neighboring colonies to join in the future. And this is how present-day Canada came into formation. The British North America Act served as the constitution for Canada until 1982. Dominion Day was established in 1879, but wasn't celebrated by many Canadians as they still identified themselves as British citizens. This changed on the 50th anniversary of the Confederation in 1917, when Dominion Day started becoming more popular. A bill was forwarded in 1946 to rename Dominion Day, but the passing of the bill was stalled due to disagreement in the House of Commons over what the new name should be. In 1967, on the 100th anniversary of the nation's creation, there was an increasing interest in Canadian patriotism, and celebrations really took off. Even before it became official, citizens would refer to the holiday as Canada Day, and the name was finally adopted in 1982. Nowadays, however, there is a movement stirring across the country, encouraging Canadians to rethink the meaning of Canada Day and how we celebrate it. As remains continue to be discovered near former residential schools of Indigenous children, many people, organizations, and even political leaders are questioning how we can celebrate a country that has historically treated its Indigenous population so atrociously. Assiniboine Park in Winnipeg plans to cut out the fireworks and instead mark July 1st with Indigenous blessings and activities. Saul Mamakwa, an Ontario MPP, posted a video to his social media urging Canadians to reconsider how they spend their Canada Day.
Bonjour, I'm Saul Mamakwa, MPP for Kiewit. July 1st is Canada Day. We recognize that for many Canadians, choosing whether to celebrate Canada Day is a complicated decision. Now more than ever, we are being confronted by the real history of Indian residential schools, which Indigenous peoples have always known. As more survivors tell the stories and more graves are found, celebrating the date of Confederation doesn't feel right for many. We should not ignore these feelings, but rather channel them into action. I understand that Canadians love this country. Canada serves as a land of opportunity, a place of refuge, and most importantly, home. Everyone who lives in this land are treaty peoples. It is the collective responsibility of all Canadians to help hold the treaties that made Canada possible in the first place. It is my hope that Canadians will be able to strike a balance between honoring all that Canada has done for them today, while still recognizing the real history of oppression, colonialism, and genocide.
And now we've come to the end of this week's show. You've been listening to Mosaic from the CKT Radio at 90.3 FM. I'd like to thank Alice Wu, Pranjal Malik, Orim Araji, Jack Soler, and Spencer Gilly. I hope you enjoy the songs we picked for you this week. Don't stay at home and go out with your friends and families. Enjoy the activities and events organized across the country today. For Mosaic, I'm Sarah Hassanin. Thank you for listening. Wishing you all a happy and reflective Canada Day.
اللقا والبعد لقا مش اختيارنا هاتلي حد يقول ده حقه لو كده كنا بقى نختار قدرنا سهلة بقى والناس ينقوا اللقا والبعد لقا مش اختيارنا هاتلي حد يقول ده حقه لو كده كنا بقى نختار قدرنا سهلة بقى والناس ينقوا مين لو يكتب كنا فين وبقينا فين حبت عرايس في الخيوط متعلقين مين لو يكتب كنا فين وبقينا فين دي الحكاية وببساطة في كلمتين كل واحد واخد اللي مشاوير وعالم رايحة جاية كله ماشي مصيره تحته خلصت ما بقتش فرقة هي هي هو مين بيلاقي راحته
more effective writing.
ما تحاولش تبقى أي حد تاني غير نفسك. دور بنفسك جوه نفسك. ما تكسلش وقوم قلب ودور هتلاقي مستك. صدقني هتلاقي مستك. دور بنفسك جوه نفسك.
Politica is thrilled to announce the theatrical release of Dear Jackie, a feature documentary by Henri Pardot. The film opens on June 17 in 4 theaters in Montreal: Cinéma Public, Cinéma du Musée, Cinémathèque Québécoise, and Cinéma Moderne, with the director and special guests in attendance at select screenings. Dear Jackie poetically tells the story of one of the oldest black communities in Canada, Montreal's Little Burgundy, by way of a cinematic letter to Jackie Robinson, the first black man to break the color barrier in professional baseball. It also masterfully connects history to the present by challenging the myth of a post-racial society. This release is co-presented by Desta Black Youth Network, Tyndale St. George's Community Center, Canteen Bergs, and Makisia Solo. For more information and tickets, visit cinemapolitica.org. We hope to see you there. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Des cris.